Okay, was there anything that anybody wanted to say about commandments 1 through 9 so far? Okay, so the first four were telling us and to teach Israel some things about God, and then as God gives them these commands and how they're to treat each other, right? It also teaches them things what's important to God. We said the family is sacred. You know, the parent-child relationship is sacred. You shall not murder, right? Human life is sacred, and it's not for me to take it. It's not for you. We don't have the right to do that. Now, God has delegated that right, has given that authority to governments and to others, right? But as individuals, it's not for me to come and take that. In talking to and I know you talked about adultery. And again, the marriage relationship is sacred to God, right? And how many times is the marriage relationship used to describe the relationship between God and Israel? Right? God is using that relationship reveals something, right? And because it's the one of the relationships that's talked about here that both parties enter into in a covenant, right? And so that keeping that covenant, the commitment that's involved there, and honoring that is sacred, right? And we know that God feels that way. He feels that way about the covenants that He makes with us, right? And then those arrangements, those covenants are sacred. Yeah, in talking to Dawn recently about these. And we noted that it's interesting that you shall not commit adultery. It's not the more general command, you shall not commit fornication. Right? It's not concerned with just illicit sexual relationship necessarily, right? It's particularly about marriage and about the covenant there.
Okay? And there are still perverse views. Back almost 20 years ago, there were issues going through the Brotherhood on this, and I thought it had kind of calmed down about the stupid views people keep concocting to try to justify things, but they're still circulating. And what I would tell every member here is it says what it means, and it means what it says.
Yep.
It's not hard to understand. And if we have problems doing it, that's the problem.
Yes.
And then wanting to fellowship all the nonsense. It is, God is clear on what's acceptable and what's not.
Yes. Yes. And on that relationship, we have more specifics. I mean, Jesus was very specific about it. Right.
And on the question from like fornication and adultery, they got to be distinguished between that. You forgive it. The person that fornicates goes to God's forgiveness. But you, in the marriage relationship, once you break that bond and you're separated, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
This fornication.
Yeah.
So you can't. You broke God's bond there.
Yeah.
Between man and woman.
Yeah.
That's something that you can't repair.
Yeah. And that's why God uses that, right, in talking about what it means for people to go after other gods, right? That basically you committed adultery with me. And so we understand how that He uses marriage as a metaphor, really, for His relationship with us, right? And so it's important that be held sacred too. And in fact, even as Paul says, there are other mysteries involved in that too. Right, when he talks about speaking of the relationship between Christ and the church. Right. Okay, but let's we'll come. You know, when thou shalt not steal. I know you talked about it, and we'll come to it in chapter 21 or chapter 22. Actually, when we talk about various laws around property. But let's come to the last one. Right, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything that is your neighbor's. Okay, what does it mean to covet?
Covet
What, Larry?
You want what isn't yours.
To want what isn't yours. Roy?
Another way of saying it's the lust after something your another has.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, is that to say that if I go to your house and I really like your television and I like it so much that I'm going to go out and get me one like it, that I've coveted your television? No, I've coveted your television if I feel a need to go and try to take, that I think I should have your television. Right? I mean, it's not, my dad came over, he really liked my television, he went home and he bought the same one. Right? That doesn't mean that he was coveting my television.
There's a difference between liking a television and coveting it.
And coveting it. And desiring it so strongly. I mean, it's not, and that's even if you don't, that's not saying that it's only wrong if you go steal it.
It's not wrong that you don't get one. But if you have that desire that you would actually want to have, it talks about be joyous with those that are joyful and those that are with tears. It's easy to be with tears with somebody in tears. But sometimes it's difficult when you see your neighbor get something like that really should be mine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. That can be more difficult. That's something more difficult. Yeah. And Nick?
I was looking at I've got a Bible dictionary and it uses the word strong desire of possession of worldly things, and it also talks about a cold-hearted worldliness. So it's like you said, it's not that I like that, I'm going to get one like it. It's like I like that and I'm going to get that one.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. You shouldn't have it. I deserve it. You don't. That kind of thing. And Mark's right. You know, one of the places where that shows up sometimes is when there may be recognition at work. You know, or one guy gets a raise and maybe you feel like you worked harder than they did. Why did he get the raise? I deserve that raise, right? And then it's hard to
very hard to
celebrate with them, rejoice with them. The interesting thing about what do you find interesting about this last commandment? Anything that strikes you as different than all the others? Phil Roberts, in his sermon that we had on it, talked about this is perhaps the most Christian commandment. Why would he say that?
It doesn't require any overt act. It's inside.
It's a sin of what? It's a sin of the heart. A lot of times people want to say that, well, in the Old Testament, God wasn't concerned with the heart. He was concerned with what you physically did, right? And the observances. The New Testament, God cares about our attitude and he cares about our heart. In the Old Testament, he didn't. Well, yeah, that's not true, is it? Because that's exactly what the last commandment is. Right? When Jesus says it's not just adultery, it's looking on another woman in lust. Right? That's not very different than coveting your neighbor's wife. Right? So it's the idea that God is concerned with more than just what they actually do. That you can't just harbor all of these bad thoughts in your heart and evil desires in your heart, and you're okay as long as you never act on them. Right? Even in even in the Law of Moses. Yeah, Nick?
Yeah, the example we see is Achan's sin in Joshua 7, because in verse 21, it says, "And I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle, and the silver and the gold, and he coveted them and took them."
Coveted them and took them. And Achan is a good example, and of course, who's maybe the most famous example in the Old Testament? David, right? David. He saw Bathsheba, and he desired her, and so he took her, right? And he coveted another man's wife, took her, and then to cover it up, violated another commandment, and had him murdered, or had him killed, right? And in that instance, he deliberately and cold-bloodedly sought about his death, right? So it's not an instance of a loyal soldier dying in battle on behalf of David. No, David killed him. set it up so that he would be killed. Yeah, Mark?
James talks about that in chapter 4. It says, what is the source of your quarrels and conflicts among you? It's not the source of your pleasures that wage war in your members. You lust and you do not have, so you commit murder. You're envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not ask to have. You do not because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask with the wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your own pleasures. You adulterate. You do not know what that friendship with the world is hostility toward God. Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God.
Yeah. And even Jesus, right? When he taught that it's not what comes into a man that defiles him, right? It's what comes out of him, because all of those things come from his heart.
But to harbor a sin in your heart is a sin.
Yes.
And you must ask God to forgive it, even though the people around you
don't know it.
It's God knowing it, and that's who we are working to please, is our God, not. But even though people see our good works.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the coveting isn't wrong because it leads you to sin. In and of itself, it's sin. Right? In and of itself, it's sin. Whether you do anything on it or not, whether it leads you to any further sin or not.
You have to talk to God about it.
Yeah, at least that, and that was his intent. That was his intent for Israel, right? And so, you know, we can see, and hopefully we made it. We kind of beat the point into the ground by now, that in the course of keeping God's law here, right, there are a few things that happen. One, you know, they line themselves up with God, right? And God said he was going to make a certain kind of people out of them. This is how he's going to do that, right? By them keeping this. By them, and by keeping it, they, over time, if they obey sincerely from the heart, right, they would be transformed by this into the kind of people God wants them to be. Problem is if you just do it as a series of checkpoints, right, and you're not really obeying from the heart, then it's not going to have that effect on them. Right? It's the same way with us when it comes to obedience. Right? If we think, okay, I've done this, you know, without it really coming from the heart, then yeah, it's not going to have the same effect for us either. So, any other comments on the Ten Commandments? Otherwise, we're going to move on from those.
I think that one of the things that happened in this country since I've been a kid and growing up is that the idea came to be very, and I think from that came a lot of the immoral thing.
What, the idea of what?
You deserve this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was a big thing. For years, people would say, well, you deserve this. You deserve this. Now it's going to get even moral and more corrupt.
Well, yeah, and that really comes from the fact that we've gotten to the point where we feel there should be no limits to restrain us from what we want. Right, and that you as an individual, you know, I have the right to choose, and all of my choices are good, you know, whatever, as long as I don't hurt someone else. And they're all good, right? They're all good. Okay, anything else on the Ten Commandments? Of course, realizing that, you know, this is the law that God gave to Israel. We pointed out that not all of them are directly applicable to us. We're not under the Ten Commandments. We're under nine of them. Most of God's moral principles have not changed. Right? But the specifics of the law have. Okay. All right. So as we move on, let's go ahead and read 18 through 23. Vilma, you want to read that?
Okay. All the people perceived the thunder and the lightning flashes and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain smoking, and when the people saw it, they trembled and stood at a distance. Then they said to Moses, speak to us yourself, and we will listen. But let not God speak to us, or we will die. Moses said to the people, "Do not be afraid, for God has come in order to test you, and in order that the fear of him may remain with you, so that you may not sin." So the people stood at a distance while Moses approached the thick cloud where God was. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, you yourselves have seen that I have spoken to you from heaven. You shall not make other gods besides me, gods of silver or gods of gold. You shall not make for yourselves."
Okay. So the result, the impact on the people from God speaking and giving them the Ten Commandments is what?
Fear.
Fear. And fear of the Lord. You know, and so that's not just a respect and an awe, right? They really are terrified. And we've talked about, you know, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. That's not just being terrified of him, right? But involves reverence and respect, awe, all of those things. But here, there may be some of that present, but they are terrified. Right? Let not God speak with us, lest we die. Clearly, confronted with the power of God, they are terrified. Now back in Exodus chapter 19.
Meeting there.
Well, they were called. That's when God gave them the preparations and all the things they needed to do to be ready to come do this, right? And it said when in verse 9, right? "I'm going to come. Behold, I come to you in the thick cloud, that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever." Right? He is testing them. He is demonstrating something to them.
In verse 18,
deliberately.
The chapter says they quake mightily.
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay, so this is the only time that God was going to do this, speak to them directly, and it should be enough. We know, unfortunately, that it's not. We'll see that later. Amazing how quickly they could forget. All right, then in the end of this chapter, there's some instructions around building of altars. What's the gist of that? What kind of altars should they build for the Lord? It should be an altar of earth. If you do use stone, you shall not use hewn stone. Right? For if you use your tool on it, you will have profaned it. So it's not to be carved stone, finished stone. Right? If they're going to use stone, they're going to just stack them up. Right? It's going to be rough stone. It's not to be. Yeah. Why is that?
It's kind of like, look what we built you.
Yeah.
This is just raw stone stacked.
Yeah. It's not to be their work in any way.
Separate.
Yeah. Okay, and then indeed instructions, nor shall you go up by steps to my altar, that your nakedness may not be exposed upon it. Right, everything to be done with holiness, with respect, seriousness. Right, and there's no place for anything profane or immoral. Okay, well let's get into chapter 21. We'll see how far we make it in chapter 21. But we're going to deal now with what's talked about in verses 1 through 11. Laws. And it's interesting that these are going to be some of the first laws that come forth. Right? As we start to... Because what a lot of these are going to do is expand on what God has said in the Ten Commandments. Right? talked about murder. Well, he's going to talk a lot about violence and what happened as a result of violence and what the different consequences are. Talked about stealing. He's going to be talking about property rights. But the first one he's going to come to, he's going to talk about, is the relationship between masters and servants. Okay? So let's read verses 1 through 11. Verses 1 through 11. Who'd like to read that? Nick, you want to read it?
Now these are the ordinances which you are to set before them. If you buy a Hebrew slave, he shall serve for 6 years. But on the seventh he shall go out as a free man without payment. If he comes alone, he shall go out alone. If he is a husband of a wife, then his wife will go out with him. If his master gives him a wife, and she bears him sons or daughters, the wife and her children shall belong to her master, and he shall go out alone. But if the slave plainly says, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out as a free man. Then his master shall bring him to God. Then he shall bring him to the door or the doorpost, and his master shall pierce his ear with an awl, and he shall serve him permanently. If a man sells his daughter as a female slave, she is not to go free as the male slaves do. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master, who designated her for himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He does not have the authority to sell her to a foreign people because of his unfairness to her. If he designates her for his son, he shall deal with her according to the custom of daughters. If he takes to him another woman, he may not reduce her food, her clothing, or her conjugal rights. If he will not do these things for her, these three things for her, then he shall go out for nothing. No, then she shall go out for nothing without payment of money.
Okay. All right. So, judgments, regulations around the relationship between, well, them and servants or slaves. This is an area, right, still with which people will be critical of the Bible, right? Because here was what God took Israel out of bondage, right? But we still see slavery, servitude, even under the law of Moses. What do you say to that when people bring that up?
They don't bring it up that slavery is immoral. And I detest it. I can't see putting myself over somebody like that. But God regulates it, even if you're leaving the two mixed up. One of them he's talking about slavery. Paul never says he's wrong in slave owning and the master owning, but there is a law for the master as well. He's not free to do what he wants to with
yeah.
the person.
Yeah.
But to say God made it immoral is like, no, God regulates it.
You know, I was me and two gentlemen having a discussion about this 2 weeks ago, who was compared it to slavery of our era and slavery and how they compared it to the Bible. And he was talking about how it was God who allows slavery. But when you look at the slavery which he's talked about, there are boundaries with other laws which would have been this slavery which didn't adhere to the slavery of Africans from Africa. You know? So it's kind of, you hear a lot of people, you hear a lot of Christian people today that say, well, they had slavery, you know, so slavery was legal in the Bible. But it's all a different, it's slavery, but it was regulated.
Yeah, and there are some things that are pretty different about it, and we're gonna look at some of those. One of the first ones you see is immediately there in verse 2. What's one of the things that was going to be unique about slavery under the law of Moses?
7th year you go free.
So yeah, it's at the most 6 years, right? The 7th year you go free. So it's a temporary thing. Right?
But that was only for the Hebrew slave.
Yes. That was only for the Hebrew, that sold himself into bondage to another Hebrew. That's right. That is not the case for, you know, they were allowed to take slaves who were not Hebrews, and that was not the same thing. Right? The ones that they took among the Canaanites, for instance, or from, you know, from their enemies.
Well, that was be a slave or die.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a difference.
The main difference, it seems to me, between, and there's still slavery today in parts of the world, but individual, these are still human beings, and God regards them as human beings that are subject to rights and protections. When we do things like that and treat each other, when somebody is property or not a human being, there's some other regarded as something else. That's what's wrong, is when you look at somebody that's created the image of God and don't realize it's a human being.
Yeah.
Regardless of what rights that you have or what the... I'm glad that we do not have that any longer in this country. But there are a lot of more serious, sinful problems, and we still treat each other badly.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're free... That our individual is free doesn't mean we treat each other right.
Yeah, yeah, and even then, just because the law may say that you're free and you can't be owned by someone, doesn't mean that even in the city where we are, right, that there aren't people who are still in bondage to others. Right, whether it's people who were smuggled into this country and don't get their papers right and are made to serve under those who brought them in. And exert that kind of power over them, right? There are still those types of relationships, right? And even here, even in this country, when slavery was abolished, you know, there were other systems that took its place in which people were still exerting that kind of power and control over people. That yeah, maybe you were technically free, but that didn't mean that you could afford to go somewhere else, right? Many times, yeah, you know, that this problem and the way that people treat people and the way the powerful treat the powerless and dominate them and exert control over them is a problem as old as people are. Right? As old as civilization is. And then those types of abuses have been present in all cultures, everywhere. Now, the amazing thing is that we've managed to move beyond that, right? And then that's been driven by a couple of principles, right? One is the truth that's talked about in Genesis, right? That we're all made in the image of God, and because of that, we're all ultimately the same. Right? And even people, as they came to realize that and understand that, still had to grapple with systems that were in place, and how do you achieve real justice in the face of that, right? But the point here is that God does regulate it. It is allowed. There are rules, and I do want to emphasize a few things that are talked about. First of all, one of the ways, how would somebody go into slavery? How would a Hebrew go into slavery to another Hebrew? Dead. Right? It's a, you know, the poor and how they were treated. But God had a lot of concern over how they were treated. You know, you may be so poor that you had to sell what you had. You may be poor to the point that you even had to sell the cloak off your back. Right, but if you were that poor, they better give that cloak back to you by the end of the day, right? So that you could cover yourself. But at the end, when you have nothing else and other than yourself, you would sell yourself.
Give it to another Hebrew if you wanted.
Yeah,
why?
Yeah.
Did we see that happening?
Yeah. Well, and that's true. We've seen that with the patriarchs in Genesis. Right, but. So they, you know, at that point, basically all they have, they can't sell anything else. The only thing they have is collateral, is basically them. right? And so they go into service. Now, for instance, in chapter 22, right, when the thief is found and has to make restitution, right, it says in verse 3, he should make full restitution, and if he has nothing, then he shall be sold for his theft. Right? I mean, if you can't make restitution, yeah, then you would have to go into bondage for that. But as we said, it's a temporary thing. Only to the end of the only for 6 years. Now there are supplemental regulations on this in Leviticus 25 and in Deuteronomy 15. Go ahead and turn to Leviticus 25. There are a few things I want to point out. That's where it talks about the Jubilee year and the and that they would serve until the year of Jubilee. Leviticus 25, beginning with verse 39. Now, if one of your brethren who dwells by you becomes poor and sells himself to you, you shall not compel him to serve as a slave. The hired servant and a sojourner shall be with you and shall serve you until the year of Jubilee. Now, there can be some restrictions on how he teaches him. And then what? Look down in verse 42 and 43. Now, he shall return to his family, he shall return to the possession of his fathers, for they are my servants, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. They shall not be sold as slaves. You shall not rule over him with rigor, but you shall fear your God. He emphasizes again in verse 46, you shall not rule over one another with rigor. Because in the end, whose people are they? The God's people.
And if you own that person, you could force that person into serving whatever God.
Yeah.
God didn't get for that.
Yeah.
He is God.
That's right. And it goes on, he emphasizes it again, even toward the end of the chapter, right? For the children of Israel are servants to me. They are my servants whom I brought out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Right? Yep.
I think one other thing that we can look at, especially in Leviticus 25, when it speaks of a sojourner or slaves of the pagans, or of the people of the pagans, that they would be a permanent slave to the extent that you would hand them down to your children.
Yep.
They would be as an inheritance, and they would be treated as a possession. And it's not so much to oppress the others, I think it's also to impress upon Israel that they are God's chosen. So they're being treated differently than the pagan nation, of course, because they're just that, they're pagan.
Yep.
But they're they are treated as possession.
Yep.
Now we've all come to the same footing through Christ. So it's there is no one better than other in the sight of God.
Yeah. And the other place where we have some discussion around this is in Deuteronomy chapter 15. And let's read there verses 12 through 15. 12 through 15. Who has that? Roy?
If your kinsman, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you, then he shall serve you 6 years. But in the seventh year, you shall set him free. When you set him free, you shall not send him away empty-handed. You shall furnish him liberally from your flock and from your threshing floor and from your wine vat. You shall give to him as the Lord your God has blessed you. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this today.
Yeah. So at the end of the 6 years, in the year of Jubilee, you're not just releasing them back into the condition that they were in. right, when they came in. Right, what do they have to provide them with? From their flocks, right? From their goods, from their, you know, from your holdings, from your wealth, right? You're gonna provide for them. What does that remind you of? Reminds you of when they left Egypt, right? That they didn't leave Egypt empty-handed, right? They left with the spoils of Egypt. Right, so they're to remember, right, and that's why in the course of these additional relationships, he's reminding them of what it was like for them. Never forget where you came from, and you keep that in mind when you're exercising power over those under you. You remember the way you were treated.
Okay. You get to verse 5. You see, a relationship is just not. The slave plainly says, I love my master. My wife and my children will not go out as a free man.
Yes, that it is possible that can happen.
That's very possible.
It's possible that can happen. Right? And so we think about kind of how things were in the stories that we do in Genesis. Right? We think about the way people were taken into bondage, what happened to Lot, right? And the way Abraham rescued him. But also think about who was Abraham ready to make his heir originally?
Slave's child.
Yeah, well, no, his originally, even before that, his servant.
Yeah.
Right?
But what we talked about in Mark was honest servants and honest masters.
Yes.
Paul said, Paul said was bad. He wasn't left. So you have to be earnest service and honest.
And even though this is not really from the law of Moses, right? The book of Job is most likely, you know, Job is not a Hebrew. If we look in Job chapter 31. An interesting conclusion from Job's point of view after his experiences. In Job 31, beginning with verse 13, if I have despised the cause of my male or female servant when they complained against me, what then shall I do when God rises up? When he punishes, how shall I answer him? Did he not make me in the? Did not he who made me in the womb make them? Did not the same one fashion us in the womb? Right. So as Ben was saying, yes, you have this relationship, you have this institution, because of a number of reasons. But they're to be treated like people. You never forget that they're human beings in the image of God. And that they're for the grace of God. Go me. Yeah.
And something that we, this passage is something that we can take into account in any relationship.
Yes.
Any relationship.
You know, and it's certainly applicable for the way we treat people who work for us. Well, the way we deal with anybody, we have to all see all men as, you know, made in the image of God, all with the inherent dignity, you know, that comes with that, and to treat them with appropriate respect, even understanding that we're in different circumstances, different situations. Right? No one is less valuable than anyone else. Before God, all the same. It's interesting to find that in Job.
I was telling you about the gentleman to me that we was having this discussion, and he told me that's what he had against my God. And I told him, your God, too. But I was holding my hand up, and he was talking about, well, we're different colors. I said, but when you turn our hand on, I said, me and your hands are the same color on the inside. I put my hand up, and then he kind of thought about it for a while. And he did ask me, well, Larry, what's going to happen to me if I don't accept your God? You're going to go to hell. That's it.
Yeah, because it's not a question of your God or my God, it's the God. And that's the lesson that he's tried to get across to them. There is only one. And we're not only answerable to him if we accept him.
And for all the smart science folks, this is the way my simple mind works. This is one of the verses about when life begins, which is always a big issue in this country. And this makes it clear. There's one in David talking about God weaving and forming him in his mother's womb. And in the New Testament about John the Baptist, the baby leaping when he heard.
When he heard Mary.
There's plenty of verses. And so when you have friends or people that are start discussing those issues with you, if they have any respect for God's will, there is no question about the value of life, every life.
We understand that in the ancient world, right, life could be difficult, and it was going to be difficult also for women, especially for women. Right, the regulations that are given here, and they'll say, really say that men are not going to be able to just use them and throw them away when they're anytime they want. Right? There are obligations and there are responsibilities. She comes in, and she's going to be like a daughter to you. He's betrothed her to his son. He shall deal with her according to the custom of the daughters. If he takes another wife, then she's going to have compensation. She's going to be taken care of.
And it seems like in the women that they don't provide, and she's out.
Well, she doesn't have to be redeemed, right? She's free.
She has nothing.
But she has nothing. Yeah. Okay. We're out of time. I didn't ring the bell at 8:10. See, I had the bell on.
That's the privilege of ringing the bell as the teacher.
Yeah.
We go as long as you want.
Yeah, now I'm not going to get out. That's a privilege only to the extent that if your wife is teaching a class too, especially if they're toddlers, that you better be careful how long you make her stay in there. Okay, well, we're going to pick it up there with the discussion around injuries, violence, and we're now to the point that we're going to try to move through these more quickly. We do want to again kind of emphasize principles, not so much into the specifics of every little regulation, but if you have questions, we'll address those questions.